A murder rate in Jacksonville that tops 100 homicides this year. Controversy over the idea of selling JEA. Plus, lots of talk, but only minimal action when it comes to a challenge to Mayor Lenny Curry. Some of the biggest headlines from the year. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, we are taking a look back at the biggest local stories of 2018 with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line right now and join us. Add your voice to the conversation, 549-2937. Then later, Only in Florida, plus the work of Phase 8 Theater Company. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy year in the news, we welcome four tired journalists. Shelton Hull, columnist at Folio Weekly, is here. Hey, good morning, Shelton.
Good morning. Merry Christmas.
You too. David Cotton, he's a reporter with the Jacksonville Daily Record.
Hello.
John Burr, our regular business analyst.
Good morning.
And David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to have you on the show. And as we wind down 2018, man, there is so much to discuss. A lot happened this year all around the First Coast. Everything from drama at JEA, the idea of selling the utility, the appointment of the new CEO, political intrigue at City Hall. Will there be a challenge to Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry? And more. We followed all of these stories all through the year. But we're going to begin with our top story for the 2018 year in review. The city's continued scourge of gun violence and homicides. Violent crime in the city of Jacksonville tops our list of the biggest stories of 2018. According to the JSO, the death of a Gate gas station employee last weekend marks the 100th murder in Jacksonville for 2018. That, of course, is a milestone no city wants to hit. So we begin the show looking back at 2018 as we discuss the inability of civic leaders and law enforcement to come to grips with our murder rate. Give us a call with your thoughts about that and how we can do better in 2019. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect @wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. We're already getting your comments about this on our Facebook page, as several of you are saying you believe this to be the biggest story of the year, too. Okay, let's begin with Shelton Hull. The 100th murder in Jacksonville happened just last weekend at a Gate gas station. There have been a number of other high-profile incidents through the year, a shooting at a Raines High School football game, 3 dead, 11 injured in a mass shooting during a Madden tournament at the Jacksonville Landing. 3 people shot and killed at a shooting near the St. John's Town Center. There was another shooting incident right near TIAA Bank Field recently. All over the city, we are continuing to see this problem, and it has just not abated at all in 2018, Shelton.
Yeah, that's true. The real story is not that we have 100 homicides. The real story is that we have only 100 homicides. If you factor in the 13 that have not yet been fully classified, that would, if you counted all of those as murders, that would make this the third biggest year for homicides ever in this city. And with the incidents you mentioned there before, what we're seeing is not just the usual wave of violent gun crime, which is a national phenomenon. But in terms of Jacksonville, you're seeing a certain escalation in tactics, like targeting, shooting a guy who's working at a Gate station, when if there's one thing every hood knows, it's don't go to the Gate, because that's where the police mass up at. The increase in mass shootings and things like that, 2 people, 3 people, 4 at a time. So it's not just the numbers, but it's the fact that, what is it? I mean, 2016, half the murders went unsolved. 2017, about 60% went unsolved. And this year, it's more than 70% unsolved. So we have, at this point, easily 120 killers that are walking these streets, and they know that they can operate without impunity. In Jacksonville, we probably have, I mean, I could only guess, probably 50 people that have multiple bodies on them. We probably have people, you know, maybe 10 people in this city who have 10 bodies on them, and they haven't been caught yet.
That's right. David Bauerlein, the number of unsolved murders in this city is also spiking. We got new numbers about that just a month or two ago from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So as Shelton said, not only is our murder rate skyrocketing, so are these cold and unsolved cases, leading Sheriff Williams and the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office to feel increasing heat to turn these cases, bring some of these killers to justice.
Well, a lot of the killings are, quote, revenge killings or payback type killings. And to the extent that it's a deterrent that you're going to be arrested, convicted, imprisoned if you do that, the fact that so many of these murders are unsolved diminishes the impact that you can have through law enforcement in terms of turning the tide on that.
David Cotton, you know, it's really incredible to think about the fact that Duval County has been the murder capital of Florida now for the better part of 20 years. In a moment, we'll talk about the politics of this, but just in terms of the sheer carnage, the tragedy of this, the human toll, it's just absolutely wrenching that we continue to see this year in and year out in the city of Jacksonville.
It's almost become desensitized. You know, we've almost become desensitized with it. I mean, I think this year, reading so many stories, not only of just, you know, adults being shot, but of how many children were shot and killed this year in Jacksonville. The Landing shooting, I mean, it was just, oh, another mass shooting in America. But it was hit us a lot. It hit us at home a lot more. Politically, this is going to be an issue going into the municipal elections as we start the new year. And if anybody decides to challenge the mayor or the sheriff seriously, that's certainly going to be at the top of their criticism list.
John Burr, David Cotton mentioned the mass shooting at the Jacksonville Landing. It was an anomaly in a sense, in that it was someone visiting from out of town to take part in a Madden tournament. But it was also of a piece with just the general theme of the year in Jacksonville, which is gun violence.
Yeah, and it really kind of galvanized public opinion. It woke people up to maybe it was the setting, maybe it was all the 11 people injured and three dead. The setting at the landing, but that particular incident really brought this whole issue back into focus. David mentioned that we're kind of inured to it, but that all of a sudden was kind of like a slap in the face, and people really started paying attention to the murder rate again.
And let's talk about the politics of this. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of 2018 in Northeast Florida. 549-2937 to join us. Now, as you mentioned, David Cotton, there's been a lot of trash talking all through the year, but no real action, at least not yet, when it comes to rumors of a challenge to Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, particularly trying to capitalize on this issue of public safety. Curry, of course, is heavily favored to win a second term next year. He has a ruthless political machine around him at City Hall and a $3 million campaign war chest. You would think that would scare off any potential credible challenger, although there are several candidates filed. Still, though, just yesterday, his most vocal opponents on the city council did some flexing. Former council president Anna Broche put out a statement saying that she's inching closer to announcing a run for mayor, criticizing what she calls the Curry crime wave. And at the same time, Councilman Garrett Dennis, another vocal critic of Curry, issued a wide-ranging public records request asking for a slew of documents related to Curry's administration, everything from employment forms for his staff to the office hours worked by the mayor's chief of staff. The question, though, is this a credible effort that we're seeing coalesce to mount a challenge in 2019 to Lenny Curry? Or is this just a lot of noise? Give us a call as we discuss this aspect of 2018. We're already getting calls about this, too, at 549-2937. Shelton Hull, Anna Broche, all through the year has teased a potential run for mayor. Is she really going to do it? And can she mount a credible campaign this late in the game?
I'm a big fan of Anna Broche. I'm a big fan of Garrett Dennis. But the fact is, unless Anna Broche is actually Lenny Curry wearing a wig, she has no chance. I see this more as the this is the first shots being fired for the 2023 race. 2023 could be Brochet versus Dennis. But at this point, of course, Curry has vulnerabilities and he could be beaten. If you had the fact that the Democratic Party has not had someone already established months ago, say a Tommy Hazzouri, or getting behind Garrett Dennis, or even getting behind a guy like Kanell Crooms, the fact that they haven't made that challenge, it's bizarre. It's incredible. Everyone says, oh, well, we can't run against him. He has $3 million. But you got to ask yourself, why do you need $3 million to run with no competition? It's because they're expecting competition. And if someone wanted to go at them and they want to do a real strong Gillum-style street team thing, push it through social media, push it through the web heavily, and make them bleed those dollars out on TV ads that go to people that aren't going to care anyway, that something could be done. And as we see, you know, this, we've had so many killings in Jacksonville this year that city leaders are actually publicly concerned about killings in Jacksonville.
It's extraordinary, too, when you think about the fact that Lenny Curry successfully defeated an incumbent mayor, Alvin Brown, largely around this issue of homicides and public safety. Curry said, I will make Jacksonville a safer city. Well, Curry and 4 years later, he is vulnerable on this issue. I'm sorry, go ahead, Shelton.
I was just going to say, Curry, great guy. You know, that race was hard. It's always hard when Facebook friends run against each other. But, you know, Curry won in 2015 because Alvin Brown made every single possible mistake he could have in that first 4 years. If he had done things in what one would expect the liberal, orthodox, democratic way to do it, he would have been this year's Andrew Gillum.
You think
Potentially.
Because you agree with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, by the third or fourth year of Brown's term, people were sick to death of him. And Curry looked like, you know,
a fresh face.
Yeah. And, you know, he had statewide presence being the head of the Republican Party and said, hey, yeah, let's give this young guy a shot.
Okay, so 4 years on, David Bauerlein, Curry is already up on TV before the reelection campaign even gets going in earnest with a really kind of warm and fuzzy Christmas ad where you see him and his wife and kids opening presents around the tree. That's evidence of how much money Mayor Curry has to spend going into reelection. And so, but as the panel has noted, this issue of public safety is one that a challenger could have capitalized on. Is it too little, though, too late at this point?
Well, on the public safety, I think if someone does run against Curry with enough money to make the message, they can simply just use the playbook he used 4 years ago and argue that somebody's accountable for this, and that's the person who's in office, that's the mayor, and it's all about results. And there was a campaign promise to make the city safer, and the statistics show it's not. So that would be one avenue someone could probably put, and certainly that's a signal that we're getting from Brochet. As far as whether it's too little, too late, it's too late in the sense that there's only 2 months until the March election. If Curry gets over 50%, then it's over, right? Obviously. If somebody can manage to keep them under 50% and get it to a runoff in May, then maybe it's possible that there's enough time to create that dynamic that pulls off what would be a huge upset.
You know, I was reading that statement yesterday that came from Anna Rocher and her political strategy team now. And reading that, it's very hard for me to think that she will not announce that she is going to challenge the mayor. I mean, she's
retained a statewide campaign consultant who's known for running credible races. So that was one indication.
I mean, she used, you know, lines like, you know, we don't want to be known as, you know, the city of body bags. You know, she's now got this Curry crime wave hashtag sort of trending with, you know, sort of the more active political people on Twitter. But does that matter? I mean, this is something I should have read in September and October.
No kidding.
You know, and that to me is the biggest issue here. The one thing also that I think Brochet is going to have an issue with, and things that, you know, the mayor's office is already preparing for, is the fact that during her council presidency, she had problems mounting credible challenges to this administration. If it was KHA, if it was removing
the Kids Hope Alliance,
if it was, you know, the
removing Confederate monuments.
Absolutely,
that did not fly.
Those type of things, and Curry's
team
did already
shoot down JEA pretty well.
Yeah,
she did.
I think
not
that,
literally.
Yes, you're right. Anna Brochet did vocally speak out against the prospect of privatizing JEA, yeah, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, let's go to some of your calls as we talk about the biggest stories of 2018 here with our Friday Media Roundtable. What gets your vote for the biggest story of the year? Let us know your thoughts. 549-2937. Ted is in Mandarin right now. Hi, Ted. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a member of a grassroots organization in Mandarin. It's called Indivisible Mandarin. And I know that we're going to look very closely at the city council races coming up. And we're certainly going to be talking to the candidates and finding out who we would like to support. And I just wanted to say that this is our top item on our agenda right now.
Looking at who you'll support in terms of canvassing, volunteering, financial donations, all the local candidates that will be on the ballot?
Every single thing that you just said is what we plan to do, yes.
Thanks for that, Ted. That's Ted in St. John's County, and grassroots support is important. I think one of you guys just pointed out, though, there's a relatively small number of people that are following this closely, like all of us sitting around this table right now. The average voter is not going to tune in until we get really close to the primary election, or the first election, I should say, in March, which, by the way, is coming up pretty quick. Mm-hmm. As you said, David Barreline, this is really going to be upon us before we know it.
And the average voter really likes Lenny Curry, okay? And I don't think that charge of murder capital is going to stick against Curry, because people are going to say, look, that's the sheriff's job to handle that. What do you expect, the mayor to get out there and enforce the law? No, it's the sheriff's job.
Shelton.
Yeah, I mean, the city of body bags is Chicago. Unfortunately, the whole country is moving further in this direction with homicides. Now, we had 100 homicides in Jacksonville this year. Mark my words, we will never have less than 100 in this city again. In fact, it's going to increase. Chicago, Atlanta, Philly,
you think so?
Miami,
now,
Los Angeles,
let's talk
New
about
York,
this, because
Newark.
We have some data to talk about from beginning in the new millennium. Beginning in 2000, the murder rate in Jacksonville ranged from about 80 murders per year to over 100. It dipped in 2011 down to 71. That's the lowest it's been over the last 18 years. And so this is kind of a good benchmark to look at.
Yeah.
And so if we stay atop that 100 mark every year with no discernible decrease, yeah, in the homicide rate, that is just simply stunning that, you know, with all the money that's been spent, all,
yes,
the task forces, all the programs, and there's,
uh-huh,
a new task force,
yeah,
on this in the city, and we cannot get below this number.
And now bear in mind the local population increases, so you have to bear that in mind. And it's not necessarily the city leader's fault. I would say they haven't necessarily used the right policies. They haven't. Personally, if I were mayor, I would get with the sheriff and I would go into the prisons and I would meet with the OGs that are still in charge of the major narcotics trafficking organizations in this community, and offer them some sort of limited immunity in exchange for putting the word down through the streets that the killing has to stop.
549. David Barreline.
I say one thing is, there is a goal by the city council to make Jacksonville the safest city in the country in,
yes,
5 years. So 4 of those years will be whoever the next mayor and city council are. What does that really mean to make Jacksonville the city safest city? What does that take? It certainly takes a lot more than what the city's doing right now, because they're nowhere near,
well,
the safest
also,
city. So what does it take?
As the Times Union, I think, really demonstrated well this week in a series of stories, you know, poverty, the poverty rate in this town is a huge incubator of crime, uh-huh, always has been. And until that issue is really tackled, until the schools in the north side of Jacksonville come up to speed and start educating these kids the way they deserve to be educated, you know, we're going to be stumbling through this, you know, for years to come.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call here on our final Friday Media Roundtable of 2018. Stanley is on the north side. Hi, Stanley. Good morning. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay.
Yes. First of all, the African American Economic Recovery Think Tank, we are appalled by the information that we are hearing this morning. Number one problem that we have in Jacksonville, leadership problem. We are overlooking everything but leadership. Number two, when it comes to the mayor, the mayor's supposed to be working on one city, one Jacksonville. That have not taken place in this city. And that is leadership is missing in this city. And if you take care of leadership, it'll take care of a lot of these other problems in this city. Thank
All right,
you.
Stanley, thanks for that. David Cotton.
You know, one thing that I think it's missed in this conversation about gun violence and homicides is, you know, if you live in the suburbs, if you live off of Hodges or you live in a nice neighborhood, you are not seeing this type of violence. And it does not get on your radar unless you turn on the evening news. And until this becomes a problem in the suburbs, unfortunately, most voters are not going to necessarily care when it comes down to voting for mayor, voting for sheriff, voting for city council. Now, at the beaches, I can tell you this much. My parents live at the beach, and they've seen a lot of violence down there. We had a string of shootings down there at the bar scene in Jack's Beach this last year, and it got on their radar, became a topic of conversation. But, you know, to Stanley's point about leadership, I mean, the mayor has everybody that he wants on boards and commissions. He's got most of the city council on his side. In his mind, he is leading by example and is leading the city.
And let's point out, too, that Mayor Curry has, what he has done is taken some of the initiatives that were begun a couple of mayoral administrations ago with the Jacksonville Journey Initiative to bring down these numbers and sort of folded them into this new agency, the Kids Hope Alliance. And so, for the record, this year, that has been Mayor Curry's response to trying to get a handle on this, along with a new task force looking at this issue. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that it's not as though Lenny Curry hasn't been working on this. He has.
Tried. The problem with these programs, though, is that until they have a dedicated funding source, KHA is going to have to go back to city council every single year and fight for a budget, and a budget that they probably is probably underfunded by about 10 to 15 million.
And, you know, when you look at the murder rate of when it really spiked in 2008, 115 murders in Jacksonville in 2008. Mm-hmm. That was the year former Mayor John Payton began the Jacksonville journey to try to get a handle on this. In 2009, 99 murders. In 2010, 80 murders. In 2011, 71 murders. The Jacksonville Journey programs were starting to work some magic, where they were starting to have an effect. Then in 2012, we spike again, and the murder rate goes right back up as those programs got defunded. Yes. And so you can't prove that the journey had an effect, but it looks, there's certainly an anecdotal connection. There seems to be a connection when you look at the numbers on this. So let's go to Jim in Riverside now. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to say Shelton referred to the fact that the deterrent effect against committing murder around here, that is getting arrested and convicted and thrown in jail, is diminishing because of all these unsolved murders. Well, I would go on the other side and say that this high crime rate, you know, year after year after year, has actually created an incentive for the sheriff's office that, you know, every time the crime rate spikes, they say, well, that's because we need more money. Council, give us more money. Perhaps they're incentivized to allow the crime rate to be what it is, because perhaps if the crime rate goes down, so will their budget. So I just wanted to remind everyone the sheriff will also be up for re-election as well this year.
That's right. The mayor, the sheriff on the ballot. There will be a number of city council races on the ballot in March. And if you're just tuning in, as we talk about the biggest stories of the year, we want your calls. 549-2937. And leading our list of the biggest stories for 2018 in Jacksonville has been the crime rate, gun violence, and homicides. Tom is at Naval Air Station. Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Great show. You always have a great show.
Thank you.
My concern is one of your participants in the studio with you had commented about the number of murders in Chicago and New York and other cities, we're talking about cities that have a population of 5-8 million people. Naturally, there's going to be more murders there because there's more people there. And I remember when Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry were running against each other for mayor, Lenny Curry's TV advertisements seemed to imply that the crime rate and the murder rate in Jacksonville was directly Alvin Brown's fault. Not only did Alvin Brown personally crush Liberty Street into the river, but he also was going around encouraging people to commit crimes and murders. So how come it's not Lenny Curry's fault now that he's mayor?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. And I think that as we've been discussing, a candidate could try to mount that same sort of narrative against the incumbent, Mayor Curry. But if a candidate does emerge to do that, say an Anna Broche, it seems as though that's what she's ramping up to do. If in fact that happens and we see that kind of mayor's race, as you pointed out, John Burr, it would be quite an uphill battle to make that stick against this mayor.
The answer to the caller's question is it wasn't Alvin Brown's fault that the murder rate spiked, and it's not Lenny Curry's fault that the murder rate spiked. And the fault, if you want to cast blame, you've got to look at this in historical context. Jacksonville has been the murder capital in terms of the murder rate, not the absolute number of murders, but the murder rate in Florida for decades. This topped out in the early 90s during the cocaine wars. We had more than 200 people a year murdered.
Uh-huh. David Bauerlein.
So, this is not a new problem.
Well, I think Curry was successful at making Brown responsible for the murder rate. And then when Brown said, well, it's the sheriff, then Curry said, well, this is just a case of the mayor always trying to pass the buck, not being responsible. The Curry playbook is the playbook that a challenger could use again, and they executed it very well. I'm not sure that another challenger could do it that well, but I disagree with John. I do think the mayor has some responsibility for it. I mean, if we're talking about somebody who comes into office and says, I'm going to make this a safer city, and we all agree that part of that's law enforcement, but part of it's a lot of other things. Well, what is the plan that you had? Did it work? If it didn't work, what are you going to do differently if you're reelected?
The plan was to hire a whole lot more policemen and increase all the resources
at
the
sheriff's office. And that has happened. We saw an increased budget in terms of public safety.
He fulfilled that. And I think, a reasonable case can be made that that being done, it's up to the sheriff to deploy those resources more effectively and attack the crime wave.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Typically, we talk about the biggest stories of the week all around town. This is our final show of the year, so we are taking a look back at the biggest stories of 2018 here in Northeast Florida. And as we talk, we want your calls, 549-2937. Now, as we continue to talk politics, another big story this year was the November midterm elections and the results locally. For the first time in practically a generation, Duval County went blue, voting for Democrats at the top of the statewide ballot. This normally Republican-leaning county was taken by Andrew Gillum, the Democratic candidate for governor. He won Duval, although, of course, he lost statewide. So here's my question to the panel. Are we seeing, with the changing demographics in Duval County, was 2018 the year that Duval started a slow and steady push toward the left side of the political ledger, or was 2018 just an anomaly, given that Andrew Gillum really caught fire with the progressive base and African-American voters in Florida and in Jacksonville?
I think what you're seeing in Jacksonville is what you're seeing across the country in urban centers. I lived in Texas for a while, right? This big red state that had this big red, bubble in the middle of Austin, which is this big blueberry in the middle of Texas, right?
That's an interesting visual.
And so the urban centers tend to be more diverse. They tend to skew a little younger. And I think that Jacksonville is sort of catching up to that trend. Now, while Andrew Gillum did make, a very good run here in Jacksonville, Ron DeSantis still came out of this you know, pretty much unscathed, considering how he started his campaign with some pretty disparaging comments on national television and how he was able to move forward. I think when we look at the next election cycle, which is local elections, I don't think we're going to have that type of surprise. I think it's going to be, you know, Republican districts go Republican, Democrat districts stay the same.
Shelton.
Yeah. The progressive left in this, the radical left in Northeast Florida was kind of galvanized coming out of the whole Bernie thing. They were hungry for an opportunity to show what they could do. They felt that they had been sort of alienated and pushed aside by the establishment Democrats. And the Gillum primary campaign focused on a lot of those people. And then you have Gillum being an exceptional candidate in and of himself. Now, when it comes to local elections, my question is, with the phenomenal, I mean, Gillum was probably the most phenomenal statewide Democratic candidate that we've had in a very long time. Why was the local Democratic Party not prepared to piggyback a mayoral challenger to be there during the Gillum thing? Why not take advantage? If you're worried about Curry's massive financial advantage, why not take advantage of all that free money coming in through the Gillum campaign?
Well, bingo, Shelton. Thank you. You know, the local Democratic—
They could play bingo, yes.
No, I'm just saying I agree with you. You know, the local Democratic party here, they can't even mount a credible campaign in the mayor's race. I mean, you know, so yeah, it's nice. They can, you know, crow all they want about how, you know, Andrew Gillum won the popular election in Duval County. But man, when you can't put credible candidates on the ballot who have a chance to win, where are you?
Lots of calls as we talk about the biggest stories of the year in Northeast Florida. 549-2937. Join our Friday Media Roundtable right now. It's our final show of the year, so add your voice to our conversation. Kay is in Nocatee. Hey, Kay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Being a South Floridian for 40-something years and being living there in the drug cowboy days and working at the big trauma hospital downtown, I was a bit surprised 2.5 years ago when I moved to this area that the murder rate is the highest in Jacksonville. I think part of what may influence that, and being a novice to the area, I apologize if I'm misspeaking, but I can't think of another municipality or city in Florida where the city is the county. Does anyone on the panel not feel that somewhat influences the numbers or the rates?
Thank you. Yeah, that is a factor, Kay. And thank you for sharing that. It's interesting to get the perspective of someone who came up here from South Florida. I'm sure you were thinking, oh, I'm moving to a quieter, lower crime area when you moved up here, Kay. So thank you for the call. And she's right to a sense that our consolidated form of government could be a factor in our crime statistics. Something else we observed in 2018 was the 50th anniversary of consolidation, and we are a unique form of government for Florida.
I was going to say that kind of goes back to what I thought John was talking about earlier in terms of the Times Union's series showing the effect of poverty on the crime rate. Well, that is something the city council, the mayor control or can tackle, and that really has not happened in a big way. And you can argue that, to some extent, maybe consolidation is a dynamic. You know, people want low taxes. If you live in the suburbs, that's what you want. That means you don't have as many resources as you would to put into some of these neighborhoods that have been suffering for years, if not decades.
Yeah, since before the consolidation, certainly. John is in Ortega and has some thoughts about the poverty in the city. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. Yeah, we're talking about the murder rate. We all know how much a high murder rate is associated with opioid addiction and abuse, and how much that's associated with poverty. You know, why not make the minimum wage in Jacksonville $15 an hour or higher? Let's do something about getting people living wages so that, you know, that would be the thing we could do more than adding a bunch of policemen.
Thanks, John. Yeah, thank you for that call. Us, John and Ortega. And I think we've been touching on this all through the show. We have levels of poverty in this city that are not unlike that of a third world country. And so, and, you know, to give props actually to Mayor Curry about this, I remember when he was first elected and he sort of challenged people who go on mission trips overseas to help poor people in countries that have incredible amounts of poverty. He challenged churches and faith-based groups to say, why don't you just do a mission trip here in Jacksonville? Help people in this city that are struggling and that are having desperate issues in their homes when it comes to not being able to make ends meet, not being able to feed their children, and on and on and on. And so, you know, this is sort of the undercurrent of everything we've been discussing when we talk about the biggest stories of the year, because this is the story of Jacksonville, and it has been for a long time.
A long time, and I would argue, you know, we don't talk much about the school district and where what their role is in all this, and how we should be funding education to a much higher degree here. But you know, the way to stop poverty, generational poverty, is to educate people and have them be employable. For jobs, as a former editor of the Business Journal, I mean, the number one complaint I always heard from people who own businesses was, you know, there weren't enough kids coming out of the local high schools that had the skills to employ.
To employ.
And they were really upset about it.
And that caller touched on the opioid epidemic, too. That was certainly another story we followed this year, the heavy toll of the opioid crisis in Northeast Florida. In fact, Jacksonville not only leads the state in murders, we also lead the state when it comes to overdoses from heroin and fentanyl. That is a sad statistic that I wanted to make note of on this final show of the year. And I want to make note of another story that we followed, all of us followed all through the year. The drama over JEA, the city-owned utility. How many stories did we do on this, guys? Wow. There was so much controversy all through 2018 over this controversial proposal to possibly maybe look at privatizing JEA, selling it off to the highest bidder so that Jacksonville could reap billions in cash and put that money who knows where to other priorities. This became such a political hot potato that the proposal was eventually shelved because voters and city council members spoke out against it. Then, later in the year, there was more controversy at JEA as a guy named Aaron Zahn, who was a board member, was elevated to the position of interim CEO and then landed the permanent job amid criticism that Hidden Hands were manipulating the process. So, give us a call as we talk about the JEA drama that happened all through 2018. 549-2937. David Cotton, you're champing at the bit to say something.
Well, you know, this is such an interesting 12 months. If we look about, if we think about, say, December, November 2017, Tom Petway makes a comment during a JEA board member. This is the former chairman of the JEA board that says in his little exit, you know, speech to the board saying, you might want to consider it. The next thing you know, we're having JEA commission a financial analysis that is presented to city council on Valentine's Day that tells us how much JEA could be worth on the open market. The next thing you know, amongst all this, Paul McElroy steps down, which leaves a vacancy. Aaron Zahn had jumped on the board about a month before. All of a sudden, he resigns from the board and says, I'll take over in the interim. And now here we are, 7-8 months later, and as most of us predicted, Aaron Zahn is now the permanent CEO, considering that he was up against a few very, very experienced industry utility executives. Mm-hmm. So take that how you will.
and certainly, as we pointed out earlier in the hour, a possible challenger to the mayor, Anna Lopez Brochet, who criticized this all through the year, could bring this into a campaign calling for more transparency at City Hall. The question is, will it translate into a big issue in 2019? Certainly, the voters had their say in November, David Bauerlein, when they resoundingly approved a straw ballot saying, if anything is going to be done with JEA in the future, the voters should have a say.
Right. We were talking earlier about the whole Lenny Curry, Anna Brochet dynamic, how that was such a big story. And in movie terms, it's kind of like, will there be a sequel? There will be a sequel, probably. They're going to run against each other for mayor in 2019. For JEA, is there going to be a sequel? The sequel would be that there's another attempt within the next 4 years to sell JEA. I expect that certainly the unions representing JEA employees are going to be asking every candidate for city office, what's your position on it? It's going to be something the media is going to be asking about. I think the voters deserve to know, the people who are elected to the council and the mayor's office, when you're elected, what's your thought? Are you, do you think they should try again? Is it completely no? Or are you somewhere in the middle that, yeah, maybe it's something that deserves a look down the road?
Shelton Hall.
Well, I mean, gosh, and everybody talks about wind and solar power. So much of the city now is being powered by the friction between these personalities over the sale of JEA.
That's wind power.
Oh, yeah, that's hot air. I think it's called hot air, yes.
Obviously, I'm not a professional in the energy business or anything, but I don't buy the argument that selling JEA is going to make some great cash windfall. My position, number one, is you're not going to get fair market value for JEA. You're not going to get half a fair market value. And why throw away a consistent source of revenue going on through the future? Why not modernize the company? Why not expand its profile instead of selling it out like that?
John Burr, our business analyst.
I don't think, stepping into the political realm here, I don't think anyone's going to bring up selling JEA again for quite a while.
You don't?
No, I think the mayor cracked his teeth on that one. And, you know, hey, he's got bigger fish to fry. He's got the shipyards development to pursue. He's got, you know, coming down the pike at some point is the dredging of the St. John's River, hundreds of millions of dollars there. I think the JEA thing is kind of dead for years to come, to tell you the truth.
I guess we'll have to see.
I would say at least in public. Look, selling a utility the size of JEA is complicated. It is a years-long process. We just heard about the acquisition of Avero Beach, very small utility company that just went private. That took like 4 or 5 years, and that is a just fraction of the size of JEA. Aaron Zahn has decided that his priority is a 10-year strategic plan. He wants to electrify certain parts of the business that are not currently, they're not tapping into, because they know electricity is not the future. It's water and it's wastewater and it's reclaimed water. And so that's what their focus and their messaging is going to be throughout the next 12 months.
One more note from the year, after much discussion back and forth, another big headline from 2018, Jacksonville got the money to take down those ramps that are come off the Hart Bridge into downtown. We also got a federal grant to develop along Bay Street what the JTA is calling an innovation corridor. And so at some point in the future, if you're coming to a Jaguars game, you'll be able to ride a driverless car, so they say, to see Jalen Ramsey play. So that is another story that caught our eye this year. David Bauerlein, as we cap off 2018, that was an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, I mean, it's something other cities have done, but it's pretty remarkable that over a period of 2 years, it's gone from just a idea to it's going to happen, and it's going to be permanently taking down a section of ramps. It's going to be kind of like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. You're going to come off the Hart Bridge, you're going to go down to ground level, and then you're going to go back up, and you're going to have like riderless vehicles, you know, in the next lane over. So it's going to be a big change. Look, if the city and state take down those ramps, and then in 5 years there's still nothing happening to Met Park, nothing happening to shipyards,
that's going to be a problem.
That would be That would be a legacy item and for a lot of people.
A quick break. In a moment, we'll keep talking about 2018 only in Florida and more. Keep listening.
FSCJ Artist Series presents the Happily Ever Laughter Tour, starring Yakov Smirnov, known for his comedic wit and insight on love and relationships. January 19th at the TU Center. Tickets at fscjartistseries.org.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Holiday shopping helps share the joy of the season with family and friends, but some toys are defective. Our website has links to help avoid dangerous toys.
More at terrellhogan.com.
The Capital Gazette's Joshua McCarrow sees Christmas cookies and thinks about his colleague Wendy Winters. Wendy would make, God, it must have been hundreds of cookies. She would give every single person in the newsroom a bag of cookies.
Winters was one of five staffers killed in June when a gunman stormed the newsroom. We check in with Joshua McCarrow, plus the week in politics, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Ira Plato. This week on Science Friday, the secret life of prions, misfolded proteins that lead to deadly brain diseases, and the ongoing fight against chronic wasting disease in deer. Plus, are we living in the age of Schadenfreude? Why taking pleasure in another person's misfortune isn't always a bad thing? That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
New evidence suggests that Russian interference in the last election was worse than we thought. British troops are on standby in case Brexit goes badly. Meanwhile, President Trump says it's time for our troops to come home.
They're all coming back, and they're coming back now.
I'm Joshua Johnson. The world's biggest stories on the Friday News Roundup. Next time on 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to our Friday Media Roundtable as we discuss the biggest stories of 2018. If you've been listening through the hour, it's been a busy week in the news. It's been a busy year in weird news, too. So we've got our regular look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Actually, I think we've decided this may be the best one of the year. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida.
Well, it's all going to pot.
Yes, indeed. As Willie Nelson says, only in Florida does a man go to McDonald's and try to pay for his meal with a bag of marijuana. Hey, makes sense.
Are we surprised?
Maybe he just had the munchies? I don't know. This happened in St. Lucie County when a guy rolled up to the drive-thru and offered a clear plastic bag full of a green leafy substance as payment for his Big Mac. They didn't accept the payment. Police found out it had about 11 grams of cannabis inside. It is legal for medical use now. So let's make note of that.
He overpaid for a Big Mac.
Right?
All right. Well, thanks so much, Shelton Hall, David Cotton, John Burr, and David Barreline. Before we let you go, your thoughts on what we can expect in terms of trends in this area in 2019.
I think from a business side, you're going to see more industrial, more industrial space coming to Jacksonville, more warehouses built, and hopefully some actual infill downtown.
Another JEA story, but this is a really neat one. By the end of next year, Jacksonville will be one of the top cities in the country for solar power electric generation.
Ooh. That's something to watch. Shelton.
I have nothing to look forward to because I'm a Jaguar fan. But I would like to point out that when we talk about the homicides and stuff, remember, our city is named after a guy whose entire claim to fame is shooting people for specious reasons.
Andrew Jackson.
Yes.
That is, in fact, true. The Trail of Tears is always going to be tied to him. And David Barreline, you've done amazing work all through the year at the Florida Times Union. So as we look ahead to 2019, we look forward to more of your awesome reporting as well.
Yeah, I'll just say that I don't know if it's going to be a trend, but I'm really interested to see what the Duval County superintendent does in 2019. She seems to have fresh ideas. Uh-huh. We'll see if something comes to fruition along the lines that we've been talking about this morning about the need to improve the quality of schools.
Excellent. Thank you all so much, guys. David Barreline, Shelton Hull, David Cotton, and John Burr. Have a wonderful holiday. Thanks for being here today.
Merry Christmas.
See you next year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And finally, this hour, we want to take a moment to talk about the work of Phase 8 Theater Company. It's a talented ensemble that pushes the boundaries of performance. By the way, did you know that Phase 8's shows are produced right here at WJCT Studios? Come downtown and see some great theater in 2019 here in our building. Founder and artistic director Jamario Stills is here with a look at what's in store for Phase 8 next year. Hey, Jamario.
Hey, how are you?
Good to have you on the show. So Phase 8's doing a show right now and lots more planned in 2019. What's going on?
Right now we are doing a play called Mass by Adam Groff, which is a local play written by a local playwright. Obviously, our goals as an aspirational regional theater company, we would like to pick straight from those who are writing stories. And this beautiful story takes place in an office party. In a holiday shooting takes place. And the perspective we get is that of those who witnessed the shooting. It's been regarded by the community as a piece that they feel should be shown in other places. It's actually a very insightful depiction as to the trauma that is left with those who actually witnessed the story. The actual shooting itself in the play is probably like maybe there's a very small percentage of that that actually takes place. And the insight that we get from these victims has been very, very humbling and telling. I myself not only directed it, but I'm also acting in it along with my company. And it's just been a very enriching experience. And I definitely urge people in this community around this holiday time to come and take a look at this play. It's definitely one of a kind. We have two more shows, one on the 22nd at 1 p.m. and one on the 27th at 7 p.m. at the Museum of Contemporary Art.
Wow. And certainly parallels to what we've been talking about here in Jacksonville all through the year. So still time to get tickets for the current show. And you have a full slate planned for next year as well, correct?
We do. I'm probably not going to put any spoilers out as of yet, but we're definitely doing a very innovative project with a local arts organization here in town. And we'll definitely be letting people know about that very, very soon.
Thanks so much. Jamario Stills, he's founder and artistic director of Phase 8 Theater Company. Go to phase8.org for tickets and information. Have a great holiday, Jamario.
You too.
And that's our show. Thanks so much to all of our guests and callers today. The brilliant and scintillating Heather Schatz is our producer. The serene and majestic Michelle Corum is our director. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Also, don't forget, we're going to be taking a break next week, returning with lots of new elements to the show. A bit of a reboot coming January 2nd. So make sure to tune in that morning. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening all through the year to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Have a safe and happy holiday. We'll see you in 2019.
Favorite holiday music is being played right now on the WJCT HD4 Pop-Up Holiday Channel. You can also listen to holiday music every night at midnight on 89.9. From WJCT to all of you, happy holidays.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.